not really a designer at the moment, but I'm more of a facilitator or someone that improves the environment for the others to shine, you know? And there's this line where he says that your job is not an ambition, is a consequence. I think that's really important in my path, I guess.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of Can I Have It in Blue, a podcast about design, technology, products, and everything in between. I'm Filipa, a product designer at Subvisual, and together with me, I've got Joana and Joel, my co-hosts, both product designers at Subvisual as well. Today, we've got a very special guest, Francisco Vaila.
Hello.
Hello. Who are you, Francisco Vaila?
Who am I?
Tricky question.
Yeah, tricky question. I thought about this in preparation for the podcast. No, I didn't. So, I think I grew up as a designer, if that is a thing. And then I got myself into that cliche, which is the designer turned entrepreneur, business person, whatever. So I run a studio now, I guess. I have people that depend on me, which is good and bad at the same time, I guess. But yeah, that's me.
Don't you want to say the name of the studio? Shameless promotion.
Yeah, that's important. We are on the studio. You can find us at onthestudio.co. And we have really good people that will welcome you to work with us.
Amazing. And I must say, like, your work is really good, or at least Onda's work is really, really good.
Yeah, well, Onda's
so
work. Definitely.
If you are listening to us and interested in checking it out, you should, because it's worth it.
Thank you.
Shameless promotion as well. And tell us a little bit about your path. How did you find yourself as a designer?
Yeah, that's interesting. There isn't a really romantic version of the story or a really clear path that I followed. I guess that everything started at i5, funny enough. And then from i5 to Tumblr. I don't know if you remember, but it was a really cool platform to be at when I was...
It is. It still exists. Yeah. It's still...
Filipa is Gen
I follow some people.
She doesn't know it.
No, I don't use Tumblr, unfortunately, but like it still exists because I still follow some people on Twitter who are working on Tumblr.
Yeah.
So it's... They're trying to, I guess, to bring it back. Because obviously it's not as used as it used to be, but it's still alive.
Yeah,
which
is it
is quite
good.
Yeah,
and it wasn't about the platform itself or the social part of the platforms such as i5 and Tumblr, but both platforms allowed you to mess with HTML, and I think that's when everything started. When my profile didn't look as I wanted it to, and then I went to Professor Google and learned a little bit about HTML without really knowing what it was and the power that it had. But then around the same time, 17, 18, I went to the school psychologist to do those, I don't know the name in English, but the to find what I should be doing with my life, I guess. And the results were funny, I think. The first one was industrial design. So I would be designing parts somewhere in my life. And the second one was a sports coach, similar to each other. But I guess that the sports coach stopped there. And I pursued that career through Football Manager in my laptop. But it really helped me choosing what I was going to do in college afterwards. There was a period where I really thought about not going to college because of family reasons. But then I got in. My first choice was designing multimedia in Coimbra. And that was because it was close to home. And I was really not thinking about the consequences. You know, I was just choosing a degree based on location, not really on what I was going to learn. and industrial design ended up being one of the last choices. So I got in Coimbra, and the course was really weird in the sense that I had classes where I really learned the basics of graphic design and the history behind graphic design, and at the same time I was developing databases and crazy stuff like that. So there was not really a place in the middle, which is, I think, is where I met, or I was for most of my career, and this is a really nice word. I guess that throughout college, I ended up exploring more of HTML and CSS and how to design a website, but then the basis of graphic design stayed there. And when I joined Group Buddies at the time, now Subvisual, for an apprenticeship with João, I guess that those things started to come out. As a product designer, it was really helpful to understand how does the development side of things works. And then there was this, from time to time, a client asking for a logo or stuff like that, you know. And the graphic design started to come out, and I dealt with that through six and a half years. And then there was this opportunity of founding Onda with the help from Subvisual, and it made sense. It's like I have this opportunity of building a team to face branding projects and build cool experiences with, you know, all the resources that I need at the moment. So I just decided to grab it. And then for the first year or so, it was all by myself, I guess, designing, developing, doing everything, accounting as well, which is so interesting. And then things started to shape out. And yeah, we have a really nice team now, and a really nice structure that, you know, allowed me to focus on other stuff like finding problems to solve, space for innovation, help the team grow. And, you know, I guess I'm not really a designer at the moment, but I'm more of a facilitator or someone that improves the environment for the others to shine, you know, and that's really worth it, I guess. Yeah. So this is my path.
I really like the way you phrased it, like a facilitator, someone that tries to improve the space for others to shine. It's quite beautiful.
I was thinking about I was going to, you know, sound like a pro in this podcast. Yeah, no, but I was thinking that there's this song from the Portuguese rapper Samuel the Kid, and there's this line where he says that your job is not an ambition, is a consequence. I think that's really important in my path, I guess.
Oh, that's interesting. During a time at Group Buddies, then Subvisual, you were focused more on product, right?
Yeah. I really enjoyed the product design work that we did back then. I guess that it was a long path between how it started and how it was when I left, and the work that you guys are doing nowadays. It was really interesting because I knew nothing back then. Learned a lot with João and everyone that was in the team. And I really didn't knew what was needed to build a good product, you know. And yeah, that was super interesting to do that journey, yeah.
How long were you there at Subvisual?
Six and a half years, yeah.
Oh, okay. And I'm curious to know more about what made you feel the need to explore more the graphic side of design then, and then what led you to open Onda?
I was happy doing what I did, and I can be honest enough to say that I was prepared to do that for the rest of my life. But, you know, there are those times in life where, you know, there's this opportunity and you can either think about it for a year and forget it or just take it. And I think that was it. I was kind of getting to a place where I was a little bored with what I was doing. Not that the project that I had were not interesting or challenging, but it was just me needing a change, I guess. And then when we talked about, you know, Subvisual is turning into this ventures studio, there's, you know, there's access to these resources, you will not be alone. And it was like, okay, so this is a no-brainer, let's try it. And fortunately, it is working, and I'm alive. Yeah.
When Bala says he was feeling bored, I think that's very accurate, and it makes sense if you look at his beginning at Subvisual and how it turned out after 5-6 years, because when Bala joined, we do everything. There was a project and we do everything. Branding, even marketing, we knew nothing. But we were just trying. We did the websites, we did the branding. And at some point, we started getting into this, well, we need to focus on something. We need to say no to things. And one of the things that I remember we saying no to first, or not no, we started by saying, like, we're not a branding studio, so we can do something for you, but it's like temporary. I remember that with Utrust, Viola remembers probably. Mm-hmm. We did some work on that. We took it seriously, but it was like, we won't spend more than X time with this. So it was like, we do the branding, but it's not really our focus. And so it began this process. And I think it was also with Utrust, like when we started working a long time in a project, in a specific project, also brought out some of that. And I think Viola, and obviously it's like a question, I think Viola is very visual, he is very creative. And at some point, the work we were doing was not accommodating all his creative needs. And I think that's one thing that really popped out. We were not doing very exciting stuff visually. That was not our focus. We were just passing the ball to other studios for that, other partners that we had. And I was going to transfer that into a question, actually, Viola, which is, because you kind of mentioned it in the beginning, like, you are not a designer anymore. You don't see yourself at the moment. You're not doing that work full-time, you are a CEO. Mm-hmm. One question that I always have in my head is, when we think about our career and whatnot, is like, do I at some point want to stop designing? Am I comfortable stopping the design work and just being a facilitator, as you were saying, as a business person, as a team leader, but not an executioner of the craft? Mm-hmm. Is that a question you have on your head at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer to that. I guess that in my case, I just adapted to what was needed. But, you know, there are studios where the CEO is also the art director and he or she is still active on, you know, the day-to-day basis. In my case, my philosophy with the team was always, okay, I have to... If I'm going to hire someone, that person has to be better than me at something. Fortunately enough, every designer that we hired are, you know, 100 times better than me at doing whatever they need to do. That allowed me to quickly jump into other needs of the studio. For example, you know, the development side of things. I think I spend more of the time at Honda developing than designing. And nowadays, we are doing the same path as we did with the design department, let's call it like that. I'm, you know, passing the ball to someone else. Yeah, it was a matter of adapting, not really a decision. And, you know, the context that we organically created pushed me aside on the design part of the business, I guess.
I had a question here for you regarding to what John just said. So you don't give any feedback to your team, right? So you don't participate in the project at all? Because I was curious about, for instance, you are a designer, right? So, and you are overseeing other people designing for your company. Mm-hmm. Was it hard for you to like kind of give up the control of the design, or is that not an issue for you and you trust everyone?
It was a process, I guess. On a first approach, it was more like I was a creative director or something similar, where, you know, people executed the tasks and they would come to me to approve before going to the client. But that lasted for, a really short period of time, because we got to a point where I approved almost everything. The team showed me that, okay, we got this back off. I happily did it. It's a matter of trust, really. I mean, sometimes the team is going to fail because they are humans, but the chances are bigger on the success part. And that allowed me to, you know, to do it completely, yeah.
What were the main challenges, like from designer to like this facilitator or whatever? What were the main challenges for you when you were changing?
Building a company is really similar to designing a product. So I guess that in that sense, it was natural. The really challenging part of being a facilitator or running or managing the company is with the operations part of things. And it's really hard to find a place where you get all the knowledge or find someone that will tell you everything that you need to know. And then you have Portuguese laws and Portuguese taxes and all those things, Portuguese and European. And I guess I don't know if this was your question, but that's the most challenging part. It's about what is there behind a business. That's the most challenging and sometimes boring part of owning and running.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, it's probably boring.
Yeah, but you know, someone gotta do it, I guess.
Yeah, it's boring. Like, you are a designer, right? So we like other stuff. We don't.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying that it's boring for everyone. Yeah, at least for time, someone that has a designer profile.
Yeah. But at the same time, I have the perks of being the first one to see the design for this new brand, or seeing this website that will be super awesome, and I'm the first one to try it, you know, or the second one after the team, I guess. But that is the part that pays off for the rest of the boring tests that I have to do, is to. You know, in these moments is where you have your compensation. Like, okay, somewhere or somewhen, we did something good enough for these people to, you know, to do their best work and to shine like they are shining now. So yeah, it pays off at the end of the day. Yeah.
And how did you learn what you needed to know? Did you learn while you were doing it? Did you actively try to learn something before jumping straight to this huge pool? How did you do it?
There were two ways of approaching the management side of the business. The first one would be, okay, I'm going to rely on Subvisual's people and operations team, and they will teach me everything and my life will be super easy. And then there was the second option that was, okay, I'm going to do this alone. I will ask for help when I need it, but I'm going to hit the wall to learn the right way. So that's the one that I chose. And it's really frustrating to do this path. I'm going to say alone, but it's not really alone, because I always had the people on Subvisual to help me if I needed. But the path was by failing and learning how to do stuff, and by reading the law and the Texas laws and all those crazy things that exist. And even finding that they exist is frustrating, because it's like, okay, everyone is, the state is not really that friendly, both in what you need to pay them and what you need to know about regulations and stuff. But yeah, I don't remember the question, but it was learn by doing some or a lot of mistakes. And sometimes it's expensive, because, you know, when you don't pay stuff in time, you have to pay more and, you know, things like that. But fortunately, they weren't that big of mistakes to, you know, to be worried about, I guess.
And do you feel confident now that you know what you need to know, or you still feel sometimes that you don't know anything?
I think I know most of it, I guess, but every day there's something new. I mean, we are remote, a 100% remote company. And the other day I was in my life and I received a phone call from this company saying, okay, we need to do a security check on your office. And I was like, what office? So there I was, 2 hours later, you know, at Subvisual's office doing a security control. And I was like, I'm a designer. What am I doing here? And, you know, there's this lady showing me, oh, you have this first aid kit that you really need to have updated. And I was like, okay, nice. So every day there's something new. And, at the same time, you kind of get experienced in it, and you face things with less fear, I guess, and with less surprise, and it's like, okay, there's another thing to do, let's do it.
And what about managing projects with actual clients, focusing more like probably on the early days that you were at Onda, because you said that you were mostly alone. Mm-hmm. Was it different from Subvisual? Like, you had to do everything, right? So how did you manage the process of doing something that the client mm-hmm. needed you to be? And how has it changed now that you have a full team?
I think the more people you had to an organization, the more complex it will be, always. When I was alone, it was really easy to control processes. Although I was still learning, and there were a lot of mistakes that I did when I was alone or with two other people, but it was easier to control everything than it is now. So now to have a really good process, we have to sit down seven people or eight people in a room and talk about it, you know, or not in a room, in a call like this. At the start, it was easier. Then it got a little more messy. We started to work on processes for the first time, because, you know, when you start to delegate stuff, you need to make sure that people are following the standard of the company. So we started to build these processes together. And then our way of approaching it now is at least twice per year, usually in a retreat, we sit down, we look at our processes, everyone gives feedback on, okay, I had this experience with this client where this part of the process is not working, or we need to change this, we need to change that. It's really collaborative nowadays, but back then it was, I would say, easier because it was, you know, easier to adapt and mm-hmm. to change something just because, you know, the next project I'll be alone again, so I can do things differently. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, this is what I have. Yeah, I was wondering mostly like in the connection with clients. Do mm-hmm. you now have a process where you that you follow when you are working for a client?
Yes, we have set up our processes from the moment where we are just getting into a relationship with a lead until the moment that we deliver the project. And the relationship building part was really difficult for me because I was used to be this designer facing a screen doing my designs. Sometimes I would meet clients, but it was not really my responsibility, so it was easy. And now I have to face people, I have to sell them things, convince them that we are a good solution for them. And that is really, that shift was probably the hardest one. I'm really, I would say I'm a shy person most of the times. And to have the nerve to address someone and say, okay, I'm Francisco from Honda, we do this, we do that, I think we can help you, you know? That conversation is really hard to do organically. I guess my approach is just being me. And I mean, if you don't like me, you don't, and that's it. But if something clicks, we can work together. And that's mostly it. Nowadays, I get into, you know, the lead generation and lead development thing. I present the client to the team does everything alone. Mm-hmm. And then I come out at the end just, you know, taking care of invoicing, billing, and, you know, asking the client for feedback. And trying to maintain the relationship for future projects.
I've been thinking about a question, but I always feel like I can't formulate the question without the best person to answer it would be the people who work with you. But I'll try this is like a trend. This is not like even a 2023 trend. It's something that's been for ages there, mm-hmm. which is there are not enough companies where the CEOs have a design background. There's not enough. And then there's like that question of like, why isn't there more designer CEOs? Because we have all the tools, right? We sometimes we lead teams, yep. we understand product, we understand relationships with clients, I guess. Obviously there's a lot of sides as you've been talking to us about that we have no clue about, but that's the first part of it. It's like, there's a trend saying there's not enough. And breaking that into two, I would say, what's different? I guess people at Wando could answer that better, but I would ask you, like, what are your thoughts? Like, what you think is different? Because you have worked with non-design CEOs, right? But you don't have the experience of working for a designer CEO, but you kind of get the picture. And, like, how is that different? And why do you think it's so not so common to see designers becoming CEOs or starting their own thing? It does happen. It's just, I guess, it's like a not so usual as people with, let's say, technical backgrounds or financial backgrounds or whatever.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. I guess that the advantage of being a designer as a CEO, ex-designer, or a designer as CEO, whatever, is to be able to talk the same language as the people that work with me. By saying that, for example, we do no code, and I'm also experienced in no code, so it's easier to talk with the no code developers that we have. But you and me, we worked for CEOs that have no experience in design. It's harder to talk with someone that doesn't understand the language. It's harder to sell your ideas, even being in the same team, because it's really hard to explain the benefits sometimes, I guess. I guess that someone at Honda would tell you that it's good to have an ex-designer as a CEO, because I get them. But the reason why there aren't that many designers as CEOs, I really don't know, but it's probably a scary thing. And I mean, if I knew what I know today, it would be a way harder decision, I guess. So that's probably it. People have more information than I had back then and don't want to face the craziness, or I don't know. But at the same time, being a designer is something that is really good. I mean, it's not easy all the time, but it's something that is comfortable, I would say. And it's a really nice job to have. So why ruin it, you know? So that's it, I guess. I don't know.
I'm curious to understand your point of view in regards to this, like, for instance, new AI tools that help mm-hmm. designers, you know, do their work. Mm-hmm. And some people also like say or like to shout out on social media that it will replace designers. How do you see it? Do you see it more as a threat or as a tool to help you achieve things?
I really believe that someone was going to ask this question. And I was having lunch today with someone that was for a long time in the same business as we are. And that person told me, oh, website designers and, you know, builders will be ruined in, you know, 5 years or something. I really don't know if we are screwed or not. I don't really believe it because design is still a really emotional, heavy thing to do. Even if you have all the data in the world and you guys build products, you base your decisions on a lot of data. And that's really important. But is a machine capable of reading the data and looking at a user's face and understand the emotions that they are feeling while, you know, going through your product or experience a website that you did? I really don't believe that machines will replace us, at least for 10 years or whatever. I guess that my kids will still be using AI as, you know, a tool that gets them somewhere faster, but not replacing them if I have any kids. But the point is, the AI tools that are appearing nowadays are super powerful, and we should embrace them. I really believe that we should embrace them and forget about the consequences. They will help us optimize our processes. They will help us be faster. They will help us in creativity a little bit because they will present you with solutions faster and with more solutions that you can pick from. And at Honda, we are really embracing that. We have used AI tools in multiple projects, but at least one of the brand identities that we did last year, everything was done with the help of AI. And it was really fun. And at the end of the day, no one said, okay, you are doomed and you will be replaced. Because, you know, it still needs a human to tell him, to tell it what to do, you know, and what to think about. So, yeah, I'm not that scared. But if we were to be replaced by AI, it's the progression of the job. And we have to embrace it and we have to adapt. 30 years ago, people were designing posters. No one was designing websites. So probably in 10 years, if there's a machine building, designing and building websites like humans do it nowadays, we'll have to face the problem and find something else to do. Or, you know, work with machines as team members, I guess. I don't know. But whatever happens, we have to embrace it. And it's part of evolution. I guess that when farmers saw the first tractor, they were like, okay, we are doomed. We have no jobs yeah. from now on. And I still see farmers in the fields, you know? So they survived.
Yeah, they just have to adapt to become more qualified, to learn how to work with those machines. I think one of the ways to look at this, at least it helps me, is like we don't do a linear job. So let's a cab, if you're a taxi driver, your job is to pick a person from point A to B and drive a machine from point A to B. That's a linear thing, and that can be easily, easily is not the word, but it can be replaced by, you know, automatic cars like Tesla driving people around. You just enter a car, the car takes you, you leave. I see that, but I don't think we do a linear job. A lot of our job is, you know, design sprints, workshops with clients, trying to understand how to make sense of their ideas. And then just the decision process, like the person that decides this is where we're going. I like this mixed with that and the creativity part. I don't think it's replaceable by AI, at least for the foreseeable future. I don't see it. I do see that many other companies, studios, whatever, might be outdated or replaced if they don't adapt to the, or if they don't rise up to the occasion and say, we have to do more meaningful work. The work we're doing is replaceable because we are just templating everything. So there's a tool that templates it better than I do. So I lost my job. So yeah, I think there's a difference between that. It's not a linear thing we do. It's an exploration.
No, that's a really good point. And yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
And I also think it could be an interesting tool to help sort of democratize design, such as like Canvas and stuff that you know, help people that are not designers design stuff, which is a very good thing in my opinion, because it helps them express what they want quickly and easier and maybe in a more aesthetically pleasant way, I would say. So it fits in that sort of use case.
Agree as well. I think it will be better for everyone's eyes, I guess.
There's definitely, it's not like all sunshine and rainbows in this path, like with any other. There's much to be said about this, for sure. There will be bad examples. There will be bad use cases. There will be people who disregard design entirely because they can do it, because they can just type in some words and try some things and then I have the design.
They are already doing it nowadays without AI.
Exactly. I was gonna say, like, it happens even with humans, like people that hire people to just do exactly what they said, because I if I knew it, I would do it myself, which is the famous, very famous sentence. And that will still happen. I just don't think the AI is not the cause of that, is not the root cause, and so it will just, I don't know, facilitate that behavior, but not necessarily create it.
I totally agree with it.
That's a really good point.
I was going to ask, how do you, because you said that one that you used already in a project. I have used that in pet projects, not client projects yet. I don't yet know exactly how to make most of it. It's actually a discussion we have been having. It's a visual, like how we can make the most use of these tools and whatnot. How do you, did Onda use it, and what was it the most value you got from it?
Okay, so what got us to do it was budget issue. It's not really romantic, this story, but it ended up being a really good guinea pig for, you know, the future, I guess. The way we used it was like, okay, we really want to work with this client. They don't have the money to, you know, to go crazy, but we really want to do something cool. So what we did was, okay, so we set up the project as we normally do. We, you know, took care of the brand personality and the first assets like the logo, the typography, the colors. And then we used that as a prompt for the AI to create the environment around the brand. This was mostly on illustration work. And I don't think AI will replace illustrators. I don't really do. But for the use case, it was really helpful, you know, because there was no budget. There was not a lot of time. We had the basics. So let's see what this AI new thing can do. It really created everything. So we got to pick even the, you know, the style that they use in the drawings and stuff. That was really powerful to see for the first time happening, to a point where we had the confidence to use it in the, you know, as a final thing. It was really cool. Yeah, at the same time, it worries me the part that is also starting to appear as an issue, which is the rights, you know? How many of those pictures were copied from someone's work? That's something that worries me. We checked to the extent that we could at that time, but we are not free from having someone knocking at the door and saying, okay, so there's this painting that I did, and this illustration that I saw in your work is really similar to it, you know? There's really not, I don't know how things are going to evolve in that sense, but I'm really afraid that someone's work gets stolen.
It's a very tricky, I honestly don't have a solution for that. And I don't think the world has, honestly, because that's happening every single day, almost. Like just the other day, I don't remember the name of the website. There was a website which style was like copied immediately by every. It happened once with Stripe, and I think it was Linear, I think. I don't know if it was Linear.
Yeah,
I think so. There's this style that comes out. It's different, looks fancy. People just start doing similar things. And like, what can they do, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not the same as art per se. But then again, there were always copies of artists. And the style of an artist can be copied. It's not necessarily his. It's just like he created a style. And then from that moment on, you have people who are following that style, but doing their own thing within it. And I just think that's the natural case. I don't want to simplify it because I know that this can be tricky. I understand. And it's hard to tape everything to like, this is his, this is this person's work, and you can't do anything with it, you know?
Sometimes it's really obvious that that is happening, But there was this quote, I don't remember the author, and I never do, besides Sam the Kid, but that said that everything is a remix. I guess that we got to a point of evolution, that everything that we do will never be new, like seen for the first time. So I guess that's what can happen with AI too, as well. I don't know.
No. There's a great philosopher called Trent Reznor from a band called Nine Inch Nails that says everything is a copy of a copy of a copy. So I guess.
that works as
a quote.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly what I think that's a better way to say this idea that you create and you move on. And what you create will influence people, hopefully, because it means you did something awesome. So other people will use that. And some people will use it in a way that you feel really proud of what you did and like, wow, this is awesome. Some people will use it in a way that you won't feel as comfortable, but I don't know where that can be. You know, I don't know what we can do about that. It's really tricky. Even in music that happens, there's plenty of examples of that. So I don't know. It's really tricky to I understand that pain. It's a discussion that happens a lot as well. But I still think of that, of the AI tools at the moment, and I'm not fully aware of where we are at in terms of technology, in terms of these tools and whatnot. But from what I use, it's like a mood board, an informed automatic mood board, kind of. You do some things, you write some things, and then it creates something for you that helps you expand, basically. That's kind of the idea, right? Not too close.
I think every designer had that moment where, why do I need to push this mouse and click this key? I could just think about it. And I think we are getting close to that. And that would be, I guess I would come back to be a designer at that time, if it was possible, you know, just think and things start to appear on your screen. I guess this is the middle term to that. And if you use it that way, I think that's the best way to use it, is like using it as a teammate or as a tool, as a facilitator, whatever. I guess that's the best way to look at these things. But everyone will copy everything. There's always someone using it on the bad way, you know?
If you think about it, if you're just like a very famous designer who like has many years of experience, you don't even, I'm not talking about you specifically, Francisco, because obviously you're in a different role.
I'm not famous.
But you're in the role of like facilitator now. I'm talking about those huge names of design that have their own studios whose name is their name. And then the thing they do is basically just draw some quick sketches and, you know, throw some ideas. It's basically the same thing. You have like, you have the ideas, you share the idea, and then someone else does it for you.
Okay, that part I agree with, the last part, but I don't really agree with when you get to this level of design that you just need to do some sketches, and that's not all that there is to talk about.
Oh no, obviously not. But like, there are some huge names, and not even only design, but artists in general, that they end up not doing the work anymore. Like
but they do. The thing is,
they have the ideas, which is, I'm being super simplistic here, but it's not to take the merit out of them. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that they have the ideas, they share the ideas with their team, and then their team creates stuff for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good discussion.
What I'm trying to say is that the idea is valuable. It's what matters in a way, because then you can, well, it's easier said than done, but you just need to find people talented enough to make it for you because you had the idea.
I was going to say, I don't agree, but then you actually said what I was going to say, which is it's easier said than done. I think the execution is like 80% of the work or 90% of the work. I think the same idea can be designed in this case in totally different ways. I think someone stepping into a room and just, you know, saying, I had this idea, this is a pigeon, go and make a logo out of this. I think the idea is cool, might be cool, might be something inspirational for the team to then pick up and then expand on. But if I said it in this room, you three would come up with very different approaches. And I would still say what's done was way harder. No, it's more important. It composes almost the entirety of the thing, not the idea. It's the execution. It's the details and whatnot.
But then you need like the work of a curator. You can be in that role. You need to create what other people bring you, their work, their ideas, and their execution. And then from that, you pick whatever you think it's more suited to the need that you have, and you move it forward from that.
It's kind of the art director role.
I was just trying to make a comparison between that happens nowadays, it always happened actually, with like AI. Obviously, it's completely different, but then you have an idea, so you write a prompt, it gives you a lot of options, and then you start from there and iterate on it.
For me, it comes down to what Bala was saying, which is like in this futuristic world where you can, I don't know if we'll ever get there, but we get to a point where like I'm looking at the screen, I'm thinking of things, and it's trying to come up with visual ways of what I like designing what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know, Bala has asked to do a branding for whatever, and is like, my idea, my visualization of this brand is like a park painted with whatever, and it starts to come up with all that stuff on screen. That would be awesome, and it wouldn't be a problem. It's like, you know, it's great. It's getting me closer to what's on my head with less effort, with less mechanized pointing and clicking and whatnot. And I think that wouldn't be something we'd say it's wrong or bad. It's just really cool. Like, it gets us to explore things faster, to do more better things. But until we get there, it's prompts. It's writing stuff, I guess.
I really see it as a teammate. You know, Her, the movie? I think the guy's job was to write love letters, right?
Yeah.
And they did it together, you know? It was not writing, and please correct me if I'm telling the movie wrong, but the guy was not writing it, but he was talking with the AI about what they were going to put in the letter, right?
Yeah.
For me, it's the perfect world. It's like, I have someone, it's not someone, but something that I, you know, I can have an instant discussion about my idea, you know. They will start shaping it, and it gets you there faster. You can understand if the idea makes sense or not faster, and you can produce 20 ideas when you had the time to produce 3 or 4, you know.
And talking about this futuristic, in a way, ideas, how do you see on this future?
That's a good question. I mean, at Onda, we never planned for a long period of time, you know. We were more reactive than good planners. So we always plan for the next year, not longer than that. But my goal with Onda is to be 100% irrelevant for the organization. That's my ultimate goal with the studio, is, you know, get to a point where if I don't show up, no one notices. And I guess that will be the ultimate result of what I'm doing. It's probably the picture of, okay, the organization is done, everything is delegated, everyone knows what to do. Of course, a studio will never be perfect, an organization will never be perfect, but this is the ultimate goal. So on the long term, I hope that I can have the same people that I have today. We don't want to grow much more than this, but we want to, you know, achieve or get connected with other clients and bigger clients that, you know, never thought about working with a studio that is remote, but it's mostly connected with this little town in Portugal, you know. And we are closer to that every day, fortunately, but that's where we want to live, I guess. This is my answer.
Okay, a very good answer. And are you hiring at the moment?
No.
Imagine people are listening to us and they might, to work with Onda. Are they hiring at the moment? So it's an opportunity to tell them.
No, I mean, we are not hiring. Hiring for us is it's a tough discussion, I guess. But we are always looking for people that want to collaborate with us as freelancers, random freelancers or regular freelancers, you know. So that's probably the best way to connect with us. And when we are comfortable working with someone and it makes sense business-wise, that's when we hire that person. We are not hiring, but we will be always available to say an hello, to give you a virtual hug. We are always available to jump on a call and, you know, just talk about your portfolio, about your career. Yeah. So for the ones that are listening, don't be shy. We can take a week, we can take 3 months, but we'll always reply and we'll probably have a chance to speak.
Bala, do you have some advice for designers that are considering go solo and creating their own agency?
I don't know if I have good advices. I don't know. I was having this conversation the other day with someone that asked to talk. And my advice or whatever would be, you know, put yourself out there and see if, you know, there's the need for your services. I mean, there will always be a need. I'm sure about it. So put yourself out there, try it out, build your portfolio, build your processes, and make the decision of, okay, do I stay a freelancer? Do I join a studio, or do I hire someone to work with me? Or do I start a studio with someone else? But whatever you do, make the decision on information, on data. So don't start it just because you got out of college or whatever and you want to do things your way, because clients won't show up at your door knocking. You'll have to go out there and grab them. So the best way is get work, show it off, get more work, make some decisions, stay small, go big, whatever works for you the best, but make your decisions on data. And whatever you are, read the regulations and the taxes and everything that you need to deal with, because it's not easy. It's not easy. And not fun at all.
And when you say information, like, do you mean, for instance, to talk with more experienced people? Because I think that was your case, right? So you were under the Subvisual umbrella. Was that helpful?
For sure. The first thing I did when we decided that we are going to do this was to contact studio managers that I knew. And of course, I had the example from Roberto, from, you know, the 6+ years working with him. Also learning by watching his mistakes sometimes, which is super important. And yeah, just reach out in 10 emails. If you get someone to talk to, one or two people to talk with you, it's already a win. I had that luck. And I can say that probably the person that helped me the most after Roberto was Pedro Gonçalves from Gen back at the time. And it was key for me to know what to do. And I really need to thank him. I don't know if he'll probably not listen to this, but for at least 1 or 2 months, we would, every Tuesday and Thursday, I would say, at 9:30, we would meet in a call like this and just talk about what it is to run a studio. And that was probably the best thing that could happen to me. And if no one else replies to you, send me an email. I will talk to you about life and studios and stuff. I don't know everything, but I will definitely share what I know.
Great. Thank you so much, Francisco. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
I guess it was really interesting. Thank I was you. Not expecting it to be so
interesting. As always, it was interesting to us. We have no idea if it's interesting to anyone else, but for us, it was really cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, for me, it was. It was really Same. Interesting.
No, it's always good to speak with you. And thank you for having me. I hope that this is worth for someone to listen to. And yeah, that's it.
No, it definitely is. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Can I Have It in Blue? Stay tuned and we'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye.